You're listening to Greater LA, the show on KCRW that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis, and today we're going back in time. To BP, before the pandemic, to right before the novel coronavirus came to Los Angeles. Few people were worried about large gatherings of people in close quarters on March 3rd, and on what was billed as Super Tuesday, there were quite a few large gatherings all over Greater LA.
This is a look at voters waiting it out in Santa Monica. As you can see, boy, a lot of people in line there. So
it's Colleen Williams on the Channel 4 News. Those lines for voters were in Inglewood and West LA and Downey and Pasadena. The list goes on and on. Those lines indicative of all kinds of problems at new so-called voting centers. Issues with checking in, with navigating this new system, even paper jams. Well, now, with just under 100 days to go before an even bigger election, state and county officials are trying to get you ready to vote with not only a new type of system, but with a pandemic to deal with as well. Dean Logan is L.A. County Registrar Recorder, the person in charge of voting in L.A. County. Welcome, sir.
Thanks. It's good to be back with you.
That was quite a time, wasn't it, back in March for you guys?
It was quite a time, and you know, there was a lot that we learned in that experience, and a lot that surfaced that definitely needs to be repaired and prepared as we head into the November election.
Well, let's talk about the preparation. We'll get to the repairing in just a moment. It doesn't seem like the election is that close. November seems far away, but it is right around the corner. 99 days, I believe. A lot of folks, me included, got some correspondence in the mail about vote by mail, making sure addresses are correct, even sample ballots. What are you guys trying to do at this point?
Yeah, so that is our first outreach to all voters in LA County. It went out in the mail last week. A couple of purposes of that mailing. One is to let voters know that for the November election, we are going to be mailing ballots to every registered voter in the county. That is part of the way that we're working to flatten the curve with the COVID-19 impacts, recognizing that for some people, they're not going to be comfortable going out and being in a public place to cast their ballot, that a lot of people are working from home or their lives have been changed by the pandemic. So that fail-safe method of making sure that every registered voter gets a ballot in the mail. And this mailing was to reach out to make sure that we have your correct address, that we have the right data on file. So when we mail those ballots in early October, that we have a high rate of confidence that those are going to voters at the correct address.
Does that mean when you get your mail-in ballot, you can just fill it out and turn it back in? When does early voting, or how early can you vote in LA County, I guess is the question.
Yes. So the vote-by-mail ballots will go in the mail on October 5th, and voters can begin voting those ballots immediately.
I want to stay with the theme of mail-in voting because it seems like a lot of folks are going to go that route, I would imagine. President Trump has lamented over and over again about the security of voting by mail, even though that's exactly how he voted in his adopted home state of Florida this year in the primaries. Let's hear from President Trump.
You get thousands and thousands of people sitting in somebody's living room signing ballots all over the place. No, I think that mail-in voting is a terrible thing. I think if you vote, you should go. And even the concept of early voting is not the greatest.
Now, Trump maintains that he voted absentee in Florida from the White House and that he had to go through certifications. But somehow mail-in ballots, there are people in living rooms doing nefarious things. How do you respond to that? This is the president discouraging you from voting by mail, and you guys are sending mail-in ballots to the millions of registered voters in LA County.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate that kind of narrative is coming from the president of the United States, given the history of voting and the history of vote by mail in this country. They're just the fact is there is no data to back up the allegation that he's making there, and it's frustrating because that in some ways becomes a form of voter suppression because he's discouraging people from taking advantage of the security and the access that vote by mail provides. here in the western side of the United States, the states of Washington and Oregon, and a large part of California, a large part of Los Angeles County have for decades voted by mail. And there's nothing to demonstrate the concern that he's talking about. In fact, vote by mail has a, in some respects, has a higher level of security and validation than in-person voting. So even if you were to have a situation like he was attempting to describe, where people were filling out lots of ballots and signing them, every one of those vote-by-mail ballots is subject to signature verification when they come back to our office. So we're checking the signature of the voter to the signature on their voter registration. If that signature doesn't match, that ballot cannot be counted, and we actually reach out to the voter, notify them of that, give them the opportunity to correct that. So there are numerous studies that have been done across the country, including by very conservative organizations, the Heritage Foundation, that show that the evidence of voter fraud in general, but specifically vote by mail voter fraud, is just not substantiated. It doesn't exist.
The Heritage Foundation, a very conservative organization, by the way. I guess I would ask the question, is the Postal Service up for this? I mean, given the extraordinary number of mail-in ballots that we're talking about?
Yeah, and I think that's a capacity question that we all need to pay close attention to. I mean, the U.S. Postal Service has been under great demand and has faced financial stress over the past several years. And in some cases, that has affected the delivery time frame associated with the transit time between when people receive and when their mail gets returned. So we have worked closely with the Secretary of State and with our representatives at the U.S. Postal Service. They have assured us that they do have the capacity, that in the big picture, millions of pieces of mail, that's what they do on a regular basis. But the legislature and election officials in California have look closely at that. We know that there is a trend where mail is taking longer to get back to us. So the legislature did extend the period of time. So as long as your vote by mail ballot is postmarked on or before Election Day, we can receive it up to 17 days after the election, as long as it was postmarked. So there's demonstration that it was in the mail by Election Day, then we will still be able to process and count that ballot.
That postmark, by the way, is like being at a voting center, right? If you're in line at 8 o'clock and you're, you know, in the poll or the voting center is about to close, you still have a right to vote, correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
So let's talk about the voting centers, because here we are close to 5 months after a wild time for you guys. In hindsight, do you think there was enough testing done dealing with all the new tech at each voting center? Because that seemed like a big mess.
Well, I think what happened there was a capacity issue, and I think some of that had to do with testing, in particular the check-in process, the electronic poll books, which are the mechanism that allow for any voter to go to any location to cast their ballot. That system did not perform as it was intended to, and there's a series of corrective actions being taken on that. But I think the other thing that we learned pretty strongly in the March election is that voters, changing voter behavior or getting the word out to voters about new services is something that has to be repeated regularly. And so we did not see the number of voters go out and vote during that early voting period that we had anticipated. And that resulted in larger groups of voters showing up on Election Day, in particular late in the day on Election Day. And we just did not have the human capacity and the technical capacity for that surge to meet the demand in a timely manner. I mean, we did meet the demand. Voters did get to vote and the election was conducted. But as far as a voting experience, we know that those wait times and those concerns with the check-in process are unacceptable and have to be ironed out before the November election.
Well, let's talk about the ironing out. I mean, what are you doing to make sure that doesn't happen again? That's a lot on your shoulders, but you know what? Hey, you signed up for this.
No, I mean, and that is our job. It's absolutely our responsibility to do that. And it's a challenge that you saw elections officials facing across the country. You saw that in places like Nevada and Ohio and Georgia and Washington, D.C. And so there's a lot of dialogue and a lot of resources going into ensuring that we streamline that process. Here in L.A., we conducted a full investigation immediately after the election, identified you know, what were the root causes of that? So the issues of capacity with the electronic poll books, the sizes of the vote centers, and we have a corrective action plan that is being implemented right now. There were at least 47 different things identified in our report. I think the good news is that those are issues that they're not insurmountable. Those are issues that can be addressed, and the capacity can be increased to ensure that we have a better process in November. And I think now our job is to convey that to the public and once again ensure that voters don't hold back on showing up to vote. If they need to vote in person, we're going to provide a safe and secure place for them to do that. And we're going to meet the challenge to address the issues that took place in March.
I mean, yeah, you talk about safe. The pandemic is out there. It will be out there on November 3rd. It adds yet another layer of difficulty. How do you keep people safe at these polling places when there's a lot of touching? There's a lot of, you know, touching of screens. There's a lot of folks who are very close to one another.
That's right. And I think those are the kind of changes that we're putting in place. And we've had an opportunity since the March election. We've conducted a couple of smaller special elections in the county. So we've had an opportunity to see what we need to do in these pandemic conditions. And a lot of those are the types of things that you see in other areas of our communities, the precautions that are being taken place in grocery stores and places where people have to go out and take care of business. So we will be looking for and booking vote centers in larger locations so that we can have the physical distancing. We can queue people, you know, in the six foot distance apart. We will be requesting that all voters wear a face covering, but we will also have disinfectant, disposable face coverings, gloves, personal protective equipment available for voters at those vote centers. We will be disinfecting the equipment after each use. So after you sign in on the e-poll book, that will be wiped and cleaned before the next voter comes. Same thing with the voting equipment. And likewise, we'll be equipping our election workers with similar equipment to make sure they're safe as well.
Scale of 1 to 10, how ready are you?
Right now, I would say that we're probably in the 6 to 7 range with a solid action plan to get us to that 9-10 range that we need to be at when we open those locations.
6 to 7, though, right? That's a D.
Well, but we're 99 days out, right? So I'm just being realistic about the work ahead. We recognize that these are conditions that we haven't dealt with before, and there's a lot of effort going into ensuring that we are where we need to be when the voting actually begins.
Dean Logan, LA County Registrar Recorder, County Clerk, who heads up voting systems for the millions of registered voters of Los Angeles County. Mr. Logan, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Well, as you just heard, sending ballots to every registered voter in California and in many states across the country has become a political issue. You heard President Trump saying those ballots can somehow be manipulated. The GOP here in California has tried to legally block Governor Gavin Newsom's vote-by-mail order. One man who is vocally opposing his fellow Republicans in that legal fight against mail-in ballots is Mike Madrid, a Republican political strategist here in the state who joins me right now. Mike, welcome back to the program.
It's always great to be with you guys.
There's no evidence that mail-in ballots are able to be, or to any serious extent, tampered with. And you just heard Dean Logan say mail-in voting is just as safe as voting in person. What's the legal rationale, do you think, among the state GOP concerning mail-in ballots?
Well, the legal rationale itself is actually quite flimsy. What they're trying to, I think, argue in really preventing people from getting mail-in ballots universally is premised on this idea that there is some sort of fraud, that there is some sort of problem there. And as Mr. Logan said quite accurately, not only is there no evidence of this, there's probably more evidence to suggest it's safer voting this way. What this really is about is it's an attempt to undermine confidence in the system and the process of voting itself. Absentee ballot voting, mail-in voting is projects that I have been working with the Republican Party on for decades now, many decades, spending millions and millions of dollars trying to move Republican voters to vote by mail, exactly what the president is now subjecting as suspect. And so what this is, the legal rationale itself is already been tossed out of court or you know, is basically valueless on its merits. This is not a legal action per se. The purpose here is to undermine confidence in our voting systems. This is all part of a broader strategy that unfortunately the Republican Party has felt would be best to engage in alongside the president, and it's very troubling for our democratic system.
Your opposition to this, and it, you know, shoot, coming onto this program and saying this, and obviously through op-eds and other ways and means, you are opposed to these legal outlets. The Republican Party of California wants you to be ousted, wants you to go away. I mean, what do you say to that? They don't want you to be a part of the Republican Party anymore.
Yeah, they don't want me to be a part of the Republican Party because I'm saying the truth. I mean, and it's inconvenient for a lot of them. Many of these folks, especially in California, have decided to side with a president who is not only undermining the Republican Party itself, but the country. And they've begun to find themselves, I think, advocating for the indefensible, including engaging in things like these broad-scale voter suppression efforts. The Republican Party is nothing like the party that we knew just 5 or 6 years ago. It's systematically engaged in this type of very destructive behavior. And it's why I'm speaking out, and it's why they're trying to silence me. As I mentioned, my entire career has been focused on building the Republican Party. There are a number of Republicans, not just myself, but Republicans in Wisconsin and in Michigan and in Texas that are all raising the red flag saying the same thing. Those of us as professionals and as operatives who have actually run these mail ballot programs know with 100% certainty that they're not only safe and secure ways to vote and to enfranchise people, but they're also in some ways, there's an advantage to Republicans voting because the demographic that uses mail-in ballots tends to skew older, which is a more pro-Republican demographic. What this is about is not about Republican and Democratic politics anymore. What it's about is undermining the system of voting. And that's why I have a problem, and it's why they have a problem with me saying that.
So where do you go from here? I mean, if they don't want you to be a Republican, by the way, what does that mean? Does that mean you can't be a delegate? Does that mean, how does it silence you?
What they're trying to do is take away my voting delegate status at the party, because I will not be silent on these types of issues. And so once they pull my delegate status, it means I won't be able to vote in the Republican Party at the state committee meetings. So it's really a very, very little actual consequence. It's just a broader sign that the party is starting to purge people that are critics who are making the public aware that these problems have become much more systemic.
Republican political strategist Mike Madrid. Mike, thanks for coming on today. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much for having me.
Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. In the meantime, while you wait to vote in the November election, there are myriad ways to get involved right now, even learn more about your local government. Not sure how you'll be able to vote or where? Unclear of who to talk to about the things that affect your neighborhood and surroundings. Have you ever wanted to really know how government works? There's a civic guide who's here to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Lex Roman is a designer who's recently launched a newsletter focused on how to make an impact as an Angeleno to better the city. It's called LA Pays Attention. The tagline, the high school civics class you really needed. Now, Lex has been distilling all kinds of information about how to be civically engaged in LA. She's here to tell us all about it. Hey, Lex.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I want to start off with some basics. You discovered that after talking to friends and other voters in previous elections, that a lot of folks just don't know how government works. So what are a few boilerplate things that you should know right now?
The first thing I'd like people to know is that LA has a website where you can look up all of your representatives. And it even includes like who does your trash service and who your neighborhood council is. It's neighborhoodinfo.lacity.org. I think that's a great resource. Everyone should know
that. We'll have a link to that, by the way, at our website, a link to your website, but also a link to those things that are necessary to sort of get everyone civically engaged. One key part, Lex, of the newsletter that you send out, this newsletter that I mentioned, is that you believe that one person can make a difference, right?
That's absolutely right.
Do you think, the fact that, I mean, here you are going through your life, you've got, family obligations, you're at home, you've got things to deal with, minute by minute through the day. Do you think people feel so detached from how, not only government, but just how the world kind of works, that they need a resource, that people need a resource like this to be able to just like a one-stop shop? Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, I think people feel helpless, like they can't do anything about what's going on in their neighborhood or their city or their world at large. And I really want to convey to folks that even if you don't have a lot of time, there are things that you can do to just make sure that your representatives are representing your values and that the city and your neighborhood are becoming the place you want to raise your kids.
And there are so many things going on in the world right now, and you might be stuck at home, working from home. You may not have a job in the first place, whatever it is. And you mentioned feeling helpless. I mean, what is it that you think people need to do more of that we're not doing already?
My main goal is to have people understand who represents them and to vote in an informed way in elections. So I don't necessarily expect folks to get involved and become a volunteer or become an activist. But I think what has been disheartening to me was learning how many folks don't understand what the DA does and they don't know about city council. And if they live in, say, West Hollywood or Culver City, they may not know they have a whole different city council. And so what I think is just important is to know who these folks are and to just look out for their name. Look out for their name, listen for it on KCRW, look out for it in the news. And just, pay attention to that so that when you go to the polls, you know a little bit about those people you're voting on.
You think coronavirus has made this even more difficult?
I think coronavirus has been, sadly, an opportunity for folks to understand how much control the government has over their lives. And I think it's an eye-opening moment for people, particularly with local government. They're hearing the mayor's name, they're hearing LAPD Chief Moore's name, the sheriff, the public health director, and they're wondering how much power do these folks have? What can they do? Who do I turn to for advice? And so it's an opportunity for folks to really learn who represents them and what they're doing to protect them and to protect the city at large.
The newsletter is incredibly concise. I might add that it's also very well designed too, which I think is on purpose, given that it's you, right? A designer in your own right. Did you pull from a lot of different resources to compile all this information? Where'd you get all this from?
Yeah. So I certainly lean on local news a lot. Folks like you, I love Lexis Olivier Ray. I love his work. Matt Tinoco, Emily Alpert Reyes. So I follow a lot of journalists on Twitter. And I also look to folks who really dig into all of the documents that even I find very confusing, all of those public records. So folks like Adrian Rizkin over at Michael Kohlhaas, Rob Kwan, UNRIG LA, and Chris Roth, who live tweets council meetings to help inform the newsletter, as well as I look a lot at the city charter, which is a pretty dense document. But I look in there for things like the powers of the mayor and the powers of the council.
Lex Roman's newsletter is called LA Pays Attention. We are paying attention to it. And Lex, thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, A Death on the Streets is a cautionary tale in Echo Park. You're going to hear about it tomorrow on the program. We're online, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Share your thoughts with us. How you doing in the middle of all this? Is government doing enough? Is it doing too much? Subscribe to the podcast as well. kcrw.com/greaterLA. Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Amy Ta, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Paul Smith, Mario Saavedra, Jody Adler, Mike Newport, and Jenna Cagle all had hands on this show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thank you for your ears. and time. Have a great night.